fucking offer. Just pick one. And I'm actually impressed that the Warriors finally were like, all right, no, enough is enough. These are them, and that's it. Like, let's get this over with. We get it, you don't want to be here, but guess what? We don't want you here, probably. We were trying to work out a deal. We couldn't because this has been so tricky. So these are the best options that we have for both of us, and we'll just have to move on. I think both are sacrificing this one. We know both have made mistakes along the way. Whether you think the Warriors have made more mistakes or Kuminga has made more mistakes is irrelevant at this point. Both have made their mistakes. How can they solve it for the now? Here's your four options. Let's go.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGNZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, and Odyssey Sports Station in the home of the Golden State Warriors and Valkyries. Always live on the Free Odyssey app, coming to you live from the Laughing Monk Studios. We got Brian Baldinger joining us in 30 minutes. Baldy breakdowns every single Tuesday. We're going to discuss all of it when it comes to the 49ers. Huge loss, huge game on Thursday. Should Brock have played on Sunday? Did Kyle Shanahan? Did Brock? Who made the mistake there? Should Mac Jones have started? Ricky Pearsall injury. There is so much. The defensive line. The Baldy breakdowns I saw, by the way, yesterday, because he put out a bunch. The lack of effort at times from the defensive line, absent Nick Bosa, was very alarming. Very alarming.
Who handled the negotiation worse? Ayuk and the Niners? Warriors and Kuminga?
Ooh. I'm going to say the Warriors here, because at least with the Niners, that's what they do. No, seriously,
that's a
though.
Good point.
That's what they do.
Yeah, that's
whether it's
a good
Debo,
point.
Whether it's, you know, Nick Bosa, whether it was, you know, player X leading up to that point, they milk that thing till the very end. They've always done that in their negotiations. They don't like to cave, Joe. That's not how they do business. Now, it was refreshing to see how they handled business this past offseason. You know, giving Kittle his extension, giving Warner his extension, giving Brock his extension. By the way, two of those guys hurt right now. Don't know their future for this season. Not good. But Fred Warner's balling out. That's nice. Then they handled their business with Juwan Jennings. They held firm. Hey, Juwan, I'm not paying you right now. Sorry. Like, you know, you want this massive pay raise. Not happening. You know, go out there and play. So I liked how they did business offseason, but I'll say that the Warriors and how they've handled this, I do agree with you that there's fault on both sides.
Both sides.
And it's a very tricky thing because I understand the Warriors. It's all about leverage.
Well, and they can only afford so much, though. Because there are CBA rules. This thing to, like, just give him what he wants, like, that's unrealistic.
And it's also about leverage.
And they can't just lose the slot.
No, and they want the salary slot. That's the most important thing here, is keeping that salary slot open. And I hate... I really despise how I have to talk about the finances of the NBA, and not to say any sport's perfect about it, but the loopholes and like things I have to jump through, the hula hoops I have to jump through to even wrap my mind around, like the salaries and how it fits,
it's
and everything. It's literally like calculus.
I know it's
and I hate it, and I don't like that I have to read multiple articles to try to understand these things and have these fancy names for fancy contracts. It's dumb. Sorry, I just had to go on a little tangent there about how we talk about the finances in the NBA.
No, it's too complicated.
It is very complicated.
But Joe, this is the thing that I heard everybody say 2 months ago or 3 months ago when this original like qualifying offer thing, everyone's like, he wants to bet on himself. I heard that a lot from people. Who doesn't respect betting on themselves? I respect it, but if that's what you're going to do, then do it. That's kind of where I'm at now. Like everyone's reported. If that's what you want to do, which is totally up to you, and I'm actually not going to hold that against you. If you want to bet on yourself, then do it. Accept the qualifying offer and do it. Otherwise, here are the other three contract options that are available. Make your decision.
Here's Stephen Curry again. Warriors Media Day was yesterday.
Do you agree with what I just said?
I agree with you.
If he's going to, like, if you're going to sell me on betting on himself, hey, you know what? That is admirable. That is admirable.
In fairness to him, though, betting on yourself doesn't automatically mean if I produce at this point, I'm going to get paid with this new CBA.
I'm saying betting on yourself would be accepting the qualifying offer. That's the way it's been phrased.
Yes, because betting on yourself would not be taking the Warriors team option
deal. Guaranteed money multiple years or a year extra on the... So, like, I understand that. Like, and that is a huge leap of faith. But if that's what you're prepared to do, like, dude, like... We're at Back to the Future, the point of no return. Like, the DeLorean's off the tracks. We're going 88 miles per hour. We're going to speed off into the future of the season. Are you in or are you out? Like, you know, remember when Doc Holliday or Doc, you know, in Back to the Future, he had the dog. Him and the dog were in the DeLorean, and they're about to go flying off.
Yeah. What is it, Copernicus? That's the dog's name. There you go.
And then Marty gets into the car, and then Doc gets stuck on the railroad. Yep. Well, are you going to get stuck on the railroad, or are you going to hop in the DeLorean? Like, if that's what you want to do, okay, and that's totally fine. If you want to accept the qualifying offer and bet on yourself, dude, more power to you. But do it. Show up.
You want to hear what Steph Curry's message was to Kuminga yesterday at Media Day? Here you go.
Negotiations are hard. We all know that. The idea of everybody's situation is a little different. Everybody can come up with whatever narrative they want to. It's how business kind of goes. You know, some things are pretty straightforward. Some things aren't. This is definitely in the aren't conversation or category. But when he comes and he's here, he should be a professional and do exactly what he expects to do and take advantage of his opportunities to help us win. Like, everybody who's in the locker room, that's what you're committed to do. And so I don't have any concerns that he'll approach it that way. And that's what we expect.
So that was Stephen Curry saying you got to separate the business side of everything. And he's being Steph.
But
right?
Do you still buy that?
I think he's frustrated that he has to talk about it yesterday. And that's what I sensed was the tone in which they were speaking yesterday, whether it was him, whether it was Draymond, or it was Jimmy. The words were saying, like, hey, I'm encouraged with Jonathan Kuminga. I want him to come back. I will receive him with open arms. Like, the words were saying one thing, but the tone was saying another for me yesterday.
It feels like we've talked more about Jonathan Kuminga's contract than we did is KD coming back in the final year, which I didn't think was possible.
You not only think that, so does former president of basketball operations, Bob Myers, who was on with Steiny and Guru to celebrate Steiny's birthday last week.
Well, you guys know what people call in about. I'm fascinated by the level of attention Kuminga gets. He gets a ton of attention. And you guys got to explain that. I think he's obviously drafted him. There's a big unknown around Kuminga. That's probably why he gets so much attention. Yeah, look, football is the king, right? So you're going to get whatever happens with the 49ers on Sunday. People are going to want to talk about that. But the Kuminga thing, if I had to guess on how many calls you're going to get on each of them, I think you're going to get a lot of people weighing in on whatever Kuminga and the Warriors decide.
Wow,
I think it's a pretty hot topic.
That's the guy who drafted him.
The fact that the guy who drafted him is surprised how much we talk about him, I think that speaks volumes.
I don't even know if he wanted to draft Jonathan Kuminga. I'm not putting words in Bob's mouth. I'm speculating. This is pure speculation on my point. There were some murmurs about Franz Wagner, about all of that.
Who knows?
We know the owner loves Jonathan Kuminga. That much we do know. Joe Lacob loves him some Jonathan Kuminga. Listen, I like Jonathan Kuminga, the prospect, too. There's a lot to like about the prospect of Jonathan Kuminga. The size, the explosiveness, the athleticism. He flashed in big moments and big games last year in the second round of the NBA playoffs against an also young athletic team in the Minnesota Timberwolves. He showed you what he can do. It's the little things that they want him to do. That's what Steve Kerr wants him to do. And I just keep coming back to this. The fact that Steve Kerr and Mike Dunleavy weren't there yesterday to speak on this, it's kind of insane. It's kind of insane.
I don't know what to make of that. I don't know what to make. I don't know.
It's the start of training camp.
I know.
It's literally the equivalent of Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch not speaking in training camp.
The only other thing I could think
of
that happened at Media Day for the Warriors in the last 35 years that even comes close is Monte Ellis day one when Steph got drafted saying, yeah, I don't think I can play with him. Like, they've never even been on the court together. You guys probably don't remember any of that.
But. I do remember it, but I can't fathom this happening, and whether it's the Giants, whether it's the Niners, because the Niners have had these exact situations with, you know, Trent Williams, with Brandon Ayuk. Literally last year, they had multiple players not show up, Joe. And Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch were like, yeah, you know, it's just we're doing business. It's just the cost of doing business, you know. And Kerr and Dunleavy couldn't show up yesterday?
I don't get it. I don't know.
I wanted to hear from him, John. Actually, I thought yesterday was just not a great look. And I'm not saying there's nothing wrong with what Steph, Draymond, and Jimmy said. Their words were fine. It was just a bad look that JK wasn't there, your head coach wasn't there, your general manager. Like, players that are expected to be there game one aren't there. Al Horford, right? D'Anthony Melton wasn't there. It's great to see Gary Payton II. Awesome. It's great. Cool. But, like, guys that you are legitimately going to be leaning on at points in this season weren't there because of this Jonathan Kuminga mishap. Because that's what's holding up everything. It's pretty insane.
It reminds me, like, the mad rush to get everyone signed before the deadline reminds me of, like, it's Tuesday night. Your giant project is due Wednesday morning. And at 8:30 at night, I would, like, walk up to my mom and I'd be like, hey, mom.
Yeah, I know.
This poster board is actually due tomorrow.
Yeah.
I've had 7 months to work on it. And I haven't started any of it. And she'd be like, what? And she'd like get in the car. We'd drive over back to Walgreens, go get the poster board. I'd be working all night. It'd be half done. I'd be working on it in the car on the way to school the next morning with my grandma. Then I'd like pull it in. I'd be like, I got a B+. I literally did this in the last 7 hours.
My favorite was those were like science fair projects, which you have had to like build like actual, like, you know, you got to do the hypothesis. You got
to
trial and error. You got to do trial and error.
And you just lied about the whole thing.
Do the experiment. Am I going to get, can I get reverse expelled from a school?
Or retroactively punished?
Can they take my high school diploma away at this point if I say that I might have taken a couple of assignments that I already posted on the internet?
Unlimited possibilities.
Put it on my own board. We won't talk about that. It's all hypotheticals. Dub Nation, we're talking about you. The preseason's right around the corner, and 95.7 The Game is tipping things off in style. Join us at Pier 39 this Saturday, October 4th, for a Warriors preseason special you won't want to miss. Live appearances from Warriors favorites such as Festus Ezeli, Zaza Pachulia, Kalena Azubuike, Tim Roy, and our very own Bonte Ailes. Plus, your chance to win tickets to the first preseason game on Sunday, October 5th, as the Warriors host Luka Doncic and the Lakers. If that's not enough, Evan Giddings and Guru will be broadcasting live from 12 to 4. It's hoops, it's hype, and the season's almost here. Your station for everything Warriors, 95.7 The Game, and your station for everything 49ers is on the other side, because we got Brian Baldinger, Baldy Breakdowns, brought to you by Crystal Geyser Alpine Spring Water. And is Brock going to play? Right there, you heard it. Complaining about his toe late last night, yesterday morning. The more I think about it, the more I said it before. And I'm not the I told you so guy, Joe. He just shouldn't have started.
Hell no.
Shouldn't have started. And I'm not going to keep running on that tangent because it's not going to get me anywhere. But the fact that in the estimated practice report, the injury report, if you will, because the Niners did not practice yesterday, but they have to send out an estimation on what the report would have looked like. Here you go. Mac Jones, quarterback, knee. Would have been a full participant yesterday. Which tells me he would have been fine enough. If he was going to be a full participant in practice yesterday, he could have been a full participant in starting the game on Sunday. That's what that tells me. Now, you know, he looked fine after the game when he was chopping up with former Jags players. He had a big smile on his face. He was walking fine. Who knows, Joe? Hindsight's always 20/20. We'll never officially know if that was the case. But it got me thinking. You know, did Brock feel some sort of pressure to just get back out there, given recent history that Mac was looking good? He was antsy to get back out there. You know, when he told the training staff, hey, I'm good, bro. I'm good. Get me out there. I'm running. They got the steel plate in the foot. I'll be fine. And maybe he overestimated his own abilities, and it got worse as the game went along. That's absolutely a possibility. But the more I think about it, and the more I'm watching and looking at this upcoming game on Thursday, I don't think Brock's going to play. If I was a betting man right now, I'd say he doesn't. I'm not reporting anything. I don't think he's going to play. You have the injury designation on Ricky Pearsall. Would not have participated yesterday. Brock Purdy toe would not have participated yesterday. Juwan Jennings, again, this is the practice report that would have been an estimation because the team did not practice. They have to submit it. Juwan Jennings would not have participated yesterday due to an ankle/rib. Yeter Gross-Matos, stop me if you heard this one before, would not have participated. CJ West would not have participated. They have injuries everywhere. Everywhere. It's pretty insane.
Yeah, I don't know how they're going to do this. They have to. I mean, they have to find a way to lick their wounds, get up off the mat, and get ready for, you know, one of the tougher matchups that they're going to face all year.
This season. This is going to be the toughest test that they've had all season.
To this point.
Yes,
right? Absolutely. We don't know what lays ahead. But, yeah, there's no doubt. And, like, the Brock thing, it's always funny when I hear people on air, okay, when we're in the kind of the critique, analysis, opinion business, when I hear people like, it's not my job to assess whether Bob Melvin should come back. No, that literally is our job, is to talk about it. That's what the fans want us to talk about. Like, do you think the guy's doing a good job or not? Should he be back? Would you hire someone else? No, should you stick with him? Like, no, that's why we're tuning in. I want your insights
on
it.
I'm not a journalist. I am a commentator. That is what I am. I am
analyzing.
Yes.
So, like, when I hear people say, like, it's not my job to determine who's healthy and who's not. No, but I am watching the game, and I'm saying, like, oh, he looks kind of compromised, right? And if that didn't cross your mind, like, are you a sports fan? Like, what? Name a person who hasn't watched a game when a pitcher is pitching and you go, the guy's losing command. He's losing arm strength or whatever, and he needs to get yanked. We do this in every single sport. Yep. This lineup sucks, Steve Kerr. Go to something else.
You see a basketball player. He keeps coming up short every time. He's clearly exhausted, right?
Exactly. Yeah. To my eyes, it just looked like Brock was compromised. He didn't look good. That doesn't excuse some of the decision-making, the throws. He didn't play good. Like, both are true, right? He looked compromised. He didn't play good. I thought he was also rusty, right? Which is another element. Like, he's barely practiced, right? Like, think about this. Joe, he's barely played this year, you know? Like, so I don't think he has any good feel or rhythm. They haven't had a lot of, like, full participants in terms of the whole team. He's barely been out there with Juwan Jennings because he missed all of training camp. This has been a tough go for like 6 or 7 weeks for this entire team, Brock included. And I thought he had a poor game. I also thought he was hurt. Like, I think both are true. But this thing that we have to cape up for individuals or just run individuals out of town, no one's doing that. We're analyzing the game. I saw PFF put out a bunch of grades regarding the offensive line.
And remember, Pro Football Focus grades are law, by the way. So we have to say whatever
it is. They're
smarter
than you.
They are much smarter than us.
I think it's a tool. I think we can all agree. Like, it's a tool.
Sure.
Like, just like I think Baldy's a tool. We bring Baldy on. I don't have
Cut
to...
That. Yeah, there you go.
No, continue. I mean, like, in a good way. I don't
I'm
mean
kidding.
It like that. Like,
I know.
Like, in like, he's a part of the tool belt. Like, he helps inform us some more. So, like, PFF put out all these grades about offensive line, run blocking, and pass blocking. I think they've been okay as pass blocking. I don't think they've been great as a run blocking team. That doesn't mean that I understand, like, I'm Chris Kocerek, the O-line coach, the intricacies of the zone blocking system and who should hit who and when and how well. I'm just going off the naked eye. Well, and it just feels like right now they really miss George Kittle in the run game,
yeah.
And they really miss him as a pass-catching threat. It feels like the offensive line isn't necessarily making a lot of holes for McCaffrey. Maybe he's not hitting the holes the same way. I don't know. Everything looks a little off right now when it comes to the offense. So thank God we're 3-1.
Well, everything looks off right now because he can't run the ball. Now, part of that is, as you mentioned, no George Kittle in the run game. Trent Williams has clearly taken a step back so far this season, and I know you're referencing the PFF grades. And
what was his grade?
I think Trent graded out pretty well, if you guys can get on that in the back. If I'm not mistaken, his pass blocking was like graded like high, which
I didn't think it was even close to a good Trent game.
Well, no, it's not. And I actually don't think the offensive line, because that was a narrative I kept seeing yesterday. Well, you know, Brock had to start because if Mac was behind this offensive line, he would have had no chance. No, I actually didn't think the offensive line was that putrid. Now, Josh Hines-Allen had a game. Eric Armstead late had a moment. There was moments in there for sure. But I didn't, like, you still had a chance to win towards the end here. I don't want to get that twisted. I thought the defensive line was atrocious. I thought you had zero QB hits or sacks.
Joe,
that was the problem. By the way, Brian Baldinger, your 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Baldy breakdowns, 5 minutes.
I think the part that's really alarming for me is that in a lot of phases of the game, the Niners looked off. Their special teams has been a problem.
Trent Williams is the highest graded offensive lineman this past week. So
for the he was Niners? The highest graded on the entire team.
The entire team. Okay. The entire team. I mean, not
on the 49ers. He had a 78.4 overall, okay. And his run block grade was 82.3.
There you go. But in comparison, I thought run it was block. The league.
Excuse it was, ran it was the highest on the team this weekend.
Okay. Got it.
Again, I'm not saying it's the end-all, be-all. I'm also not saying it means nothing. It's something. It's a tool. My eyes told me that the left side, because I charted left and right side runs, just wasn't breaking a lot of holes. Getting back to the team. in what phase right now do they look good? Well, I think the linebacker play has been pretty good through the first couple of games. I think in this game, maybe it took a slight step back. You know, D had a really poor penalty that set up a field goal.
He's on the injury report, the estimated injury report as well. With a
knee. That's not great.
He would have been a limited participant had they practiced yesterday.
And I thought, Siegel a couple of times in space, Pinnock a couple of times in space, took some bad angles. Clearly, Luter was getting picked on a little. They were laying off guys and I think to me the most alarming part of the defense. You went up against the Jacksonville Jaguar offensive line that I couldn't name one guy, and then they lost their right tackle.
Yeah,
and you didn't even touch Trevor Lawrence. So that's something that is a very, very poor indicator if that's what's to come for the rest of the season. They have got to find a way to generate pass rush.
And we knew it was going to be a challenge, right? Like, we knew you lose Nick Bosa, you don't replace a guy like that. And what Nick Bosa means for those other players, more importantly, because it's one thing, Joe, Nick Bosa himself, against the run, getting his sacks, getting the pressures, him on his own and commanding a double team at time. Like I just said, commanding a double team opens up things for the Mykel Williamses, the Bryce Huffs, these other guys that can make plays. So when he's not out there, it's a trickle-down effect. It's not only losing the player, but you're also losing some spots for other guys that they would normally have one-on-one matchups. They're getting double teamed now. They're getting stuffed.
But
I didn't hear Mykel Williams say once on Sunday, once.
Which is all true. But I step back and I watch the game. Psycho. I watched the game a third time. I thought the defense got some stops. I actually thought they played better than I thought in real time. Now, they gave up some chunk runs, very specifically, and it could have been worse if it weren't for some penalties. The Jaguars were kind of a pre-snap mess.
Yeah, their game plan, like Jacksonville, when you watch back that game, I think they should have like destroyed the Niners if they had just leaned on the running game more. In ETN, instead of 19 carries, give them like 29. Have like a traditional McCaffrey game of a couple years ago. I think they would have ran away with this thing, and I think he might have had 200 yards rushing. Well, seriously.
Brian Thomas didn't get his feet down on a play.
He's sliding out of bounds.
Yeah, there was a variety of questionable things.
10-plus penalties.
But, you have a Luter penalty on special teams. You give up a punt return touchdown. You give up a huge kick return right before halftime after scoring a field goal and giving it up. So I look at the defensive and the special team side, and I'm more encouraged on defense than I initially felt Sunday night, Monday morning, but I'm more down on special teams than I was even on Sunday night, Monday morning. Then I look at the offense, and it's just the run game. I just don't know. I don't know what's going on, and that's the thing I want to ask Brian Baldinger. Like, if they used to be able to run to the left side, and I know that Trent was a big part of that. Aaron Banks, who used to be on this team, was a big part of that, but Kittle was also a big part of that. How much do they miss Kittle?
Oh my God, are you kidding me? They miss him in blocking, running. He is, as much as we talk about Christian McCaffrey being the dude, I mean, George Kittle was their best offensive player last year, Joe. He was he's been one of their best offensive players for quite some time, since he's been a Niner. He's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah,
just like you don't replace Nick Bosa with one guy, it takes three or four. The same could be said for about George Kittle. I love Jake Tonjes. He showed up last week. Tonjes is actually one of the bright spots I saw last week, and I thought he was going to be out for the game after he got hurt.
I did too.
Right? He had three receptions, 58 yards, and a touchdown.
The other part is a lot of guys are just dropping balls or running into guys or they're running in the wrong areas. So there's a lot I don't know that Shanahan and Brock would know better. But also there were some decisions I didn't love from Brock Purdy that I know the all 22 filmites, as I call them, are looking at them and they're like explaining, like, this is why you love Brock and he takes this throw. In that game, I thought a more conservative approach overall was probably the prudent thing, considering you're coming back from a major injury and you're not able to scramble and be as reckless as you normally would be.
You ready for Shark Week?
I'm born ready for Baldy.
Let's do it.
He breaks down plays better than anyone.
I mean, this is like Shark Week now. And you know what Baker Mayfield is? He's chum. Look at these sharks. You think you're getting away from those four angry sharks? It's Shark Week. It's time to eat. Make the read. Urgency. That's the name of the game right here. Urgency. Now, on it. He's on it. Touchdown. Beautiful throw.
He's our 95.7 The Game NFL insider, Brian Baldinger.
And he's presented by our proud partner, Golden State Lumber and Showroom, serving the Bay Area for three generations. Building better starts with Golden State. When you succeed, we succeed. Visit GoldenStateLumber.com. And as always, He is a guest on this station, and all guests on 95.7 The Game appear on the River Islands guest line. Isn't it time for you to discover the islands, River Islands, in Lathrop? Baldy, we'll bring you right into the conversation we were having. Obviously, the Niners play on Thursday Night Football this week, so they had their, you know, if they had practice yesterday, which they didn't, they had a practice report estimation, and, you know, you have about, I want to count, like 10-plus names on this thing compared to the Rams' 5, and one of those names is Brock Purdy, and the injury designation, obviously, toe, and he would not have participated yesterday. And let's start there. It's a quarterback-driven league. Let's start with the quarterback. Baldy, what did you see from Brock on Sunday in that loss to the Jags?
You know, the interceptions are disappointing. I mean, nobody wants to throw interceptions. The throw to McCaffrey was just an aggressive throw on first and 10. It was right, I think it was right after the 31-yard shot to Pearsall. And it was first and 10. I thought he could have just checked it down to Juice or Tongas over the middle. But he saw McCaffrey breaking, and he took a shot. McCaffrey got his fingers on it. Like that one, he didn't have to do that. So I felt, but that's kind of who he is. He's going to be aggressive. I kind of understood it, but then it wasn't the best throw. It sailed on him a little bit. It's a tough throw. And then the other one, I don't think he saw Devin Lloyd over the middle. He was going to Jennings. I just don't think he saw Lloyd. Lloyd had no work on his side of the field, and he was just looking at the eyes. And then he jumped the route. I'm not sure that he saw him. And I just thought, you know, even the first play of the game, he's got Juice leaking out of the backfield, and you know, he kind of shorted it on him. I mean, Juice might still be running. You know, I just thought there were some plays left on the field that even made a difference in that game.
Yeah, Baldy, I thought the ball placement was like a hallmark of his. You know, hitting a guy in stride so he can turn up field. And it just looked like to me, you referenced that first play of the game, he just looked a little ginger on that foot. And I don't want to use that as an excuse, but he just didn't look like himself for a variety of reasons. Do you think it was rust, the foot? You know, I don't know. Like, why was that? Why did he look so like?
Well, he was like on that first throw. He was under a little pressure, but I can't. We can't. You know, you throw with your legs.
Yeah.
And so we just don't know what that really feels like. I mean, turf toe is like, I'm sure they numbed it up. Who knows? I mean, I don't want to project here, but you know, it's a bad injury. You know, it's ended people's careers. You know, and it's varying degrees of it. You know, and I'm sure that it didn't feel great after the game, but it's one of those injuries where you can't really stop thinking about it because it's not, it just doesn't go away. You know, it's there, it lingers. And so I don't know, you know, Joe, it's not fair to be overly critical if deep down he's like, man, I'm like 90% and I can't push the way I want to push to drive a football to Juice on the other side of the field. And I can't get what I want to get on the ball. And it kind of dies on him, and Juices have to, you know, almost like go backwards to catch it. So, I mean, that's one throw. But, I mean, he made a lot of good throws in that game too. But I just thought, you know, Jacksonville, they won the turnover battle, man. I mean, that you win the turnover battle at that degree, you're going to win the game.
Well, I'm glad you bring up turnovers because, you know, I'm – telling people, I'm like, you know, one of the themes since the Baltimore game and Christmas a couple of years ago, it's just the touchdowns and the turnovers are too closely aligned. It's like a 1-to-1 ratio. Going back to the start of last year, he's 7-10. The team is with him as a starter, and he's got 29 total touchdowns, 5 rushing of those 29, and he's got 16 interceptions and 8 fumbles. Have you noticed something different from his play regarding the turnovers, or is that just an outlier?
Well, I mean, so many of those turnovers now over the last 2 years, 20 games, it's 21 games, is, you know, just the talent around him isn't as good, you know, and every quarterback is only as good as the talent around him. I mean, there's very few guys that can just, maybe Joe Burrow, maybe there's a couple. But, you know, you look at Baker and how he plays with what he has around him. You look at what Jalen Hurts, how he plays and how he doesn't turn the ball over with the guys around him. I mean, it's a total team game, and the talent isn't anywhere near what it was 2 years ago on that field right now. IU can, I mean, just go through the list of guys, Aaron Banks, whatever. Like, it's just not as good around Brock Purdy right now, and that's part of it. Like, he's not getting just clean looks and guys winning one-on-ones and receivers, you know, beating their best corner the way IU did 2 years ago, or you know, Kittle popping free. Like, they just don't have those guys on the field right now.
Talking to Brian Baldinger here on the Morning Roast, our Odyssey NFL insider. Baldy joins us every single Tuesday. Every Tuesday at this time. Baldy, a big part of this, too, right, is the lack of complementary football. I mean, this is a bottom five rushing offense right now by a lot of the metrics, which is crazy. A Kyle Shanahan offense is bottom five in rushing after the first 4 weeks. What do you attribute that to?
Well, I mean, they're not getting some of the plays that they are used to running, you know, whether, I mean, I broke it down one time, forget about all the motions and shifts. They basically run five plays. They run outside zone, inside zone. They run power. They run a windback play. I mean, it's based in this set of different formations and sets and things like that. But it all, like I always said, that no matter where the run started, it would end up behind Trent. And he's not the, he's, you know, Trent's still a good player. He's not the dominant player that we have seen in San Francisco. He's giving up pressures. He's not the same run blocker. And they're missing Kittle, who blocked the edges better than anybody in this business. But, I mean, they're not getting the – I mean, I think McCaffrey's running hard, really hard. But they're just not getting the type of cutback lanes that they're used to getting, where it's just space and they just get these wide open prairies to run behind. There's, you know, it's kind of clogged up in the middle. I don't think Pooney is playing as good as he did as a rookie right now, for whatever reason. So they're not as good up front. They got a, you know, a seventh round pick at left guard right now that's trying to learn how to play the game. So they're not as good up front. I think that's where it starts.
You were referencing Trent Williams as a whole. And he's just not what he was maybe beforehand. I think a lot of people feel the same way about Christian right now. I think, you know, Christian looks better than maybe the 2024 version, but it doesn't feel anything close to 2023. What are you seeing from Christian McCaffrey right now?
I thought I would see more explosive plays from him. I thought he was getting close. A couple weeks ago, I said, I think he's going to break one. I thought he was getting ready. And he hasn't. And that's been his hallmark. His hallmark is, you know, okay, 8-yard run becomes a 28-yard run. Like, we're not seeing the explosive plays. He's catching the ball great. He's, you know, he's heavily involved in the passing game. But we haven't seen that 4-yard run, 4-yard run, 20-yard run. We just haven't seen that. And I don't know if that's him, if that's the explosive step that's not there that he needs. He's still breaking tackles, probably not as many as he did, to get to those runs that he did in 23. I mean, if you think about that first game, I think it was 2023, they were in Pittsburgh, and he opened up the third quarter, and he took that shot on the left side, and he finished it. Like, I mean, it was just – I mean, that set the tone for a whole season. Like, I don't know why I remember I was there announcing a game that day, but I actually got some goosebumps just thinking about that, because that was McCaffrey against a good defense. I think he made, you know, Minka miss, and, you know, he's running through arm tackles, and he finishes it. Like, maybe, I don't know. Maybe we're not going to see that again. I don't know.
Well, Baldy, like, it feels like to me the most explosive player on offense has been Ricky Pearsall. And I know that he's dealing with a knee thing right now. He had Travis Hunter on him. He did a little, like, some sort of a curl or a comeback. Boom, simple little first down. And then he made an unbelievable acrobatic catch on a slightly underthrown ball where he caught it, like, one-handed. But he went down in that game. Obviously, this guy's making plays. He looks like an absolute stud. Is he the only guy that's giving you explosives right now on this offense?
Yeah, but, you know, that play, like, he beat the corner. Like, I thought Brock should have gone over the top. Now, maybe he just couldn't get it there, but I thought it should have been an over-the-top shot. I don't think they needed to back shoulder that thing. I mean, Ricky just adjusted to the ball, and it made that unbelievable one-handed catch, like, going to the ground. It was incredible. But you know, he had a step on him. I thought you should just throw the ball over the top and let him go get it and finish in the paint.
Baldy, it feels like the only explosive play that most people can remember is the drop ball by Bourne was just, it was massive, and I don't want to sleep on that. That was absolutely massive.
Yep.
But, like,
no doubt.
What a hook and lateral play.
He probably, that throw in the middle of the field, he probably finishes that play.
Oh.
You know, like, there's so much space there to actually score on that play. Mm. Like, that he probably scores on that play.
Well, but, like, the only other play that most people can remember, the Pearsall play down the sideline, and, like, the hook and ladder play. There's just, there's not a lot of juice right now on offense. How do they get this going, whether it's Brock or Mac?
Well, I mean, if you think about it, honestly, Joe, why do they call the hook and ladder? Because Kyle's seen the same thing. We can't get an explosive play. Explosive plays, I mean, you see Travis Etienne go, you know, 40-something yards for a touchdown. Like, they got their explosive plays. But explosive plays are a direct correlation to scoring, you know. And if you're not getting them, you're not scoring a lot of points. You're not putting a lot of points up if you're not getting those type of plays. And so that's why they call the hook and ladder. We got to find a way to get it. We got to go to some trickeration, you know, some deceptive in order to get a throwback. You watch this week. If they're not getting it, Joe, I guarantee you they'll have a throwback from McCaffrey back to Brock. You know, and do it that way rather than, you know, just, you know, winning by route combinations and, you know, rub routes against man coverage and zone beaters and the things that you could get. But, I mean, honestly, Tongas has been as good as you could possibly imagine, considering where he came from. Like, he's been a fine, but they're not, you know, until Ayuk and Kittle get back. And Pearsall's 100% healthy. They probably don't have those type of players out there right now.
Does Mac maybe change? Like, obviously Brock's your guy, but he looks compromised. Does Mac's arm maybe bring a different dynamic to the table? I'm thinking out loud here and trying to find a silver lining for Thursday.
Yeah. Well, it'll be the silver lining is it's a 49er home game at SoFi, so they'll take over the stadium. I mean, that's the silver lining. But, you know, I always thought when San Francisco had the Rams number, and they had it for a long time, that they just physically beat the Rams up in the trenches, no matter who was the quarterback, with Stafford, before Stafford. I just felt like the 49ers were a more physical team, and that's why they won a lot of those games. Now, the Rams, you know, have a defensive front right now that is really talented. They're really good. Jared Verse has had two forced fumbles in a row, back-to-back weeks right now. He's a monster. I think their secondary is very average. I know that Cam Curl had a couple interceptions on Sunday, but I think they're very average at the cornerback position. People seem to be going after Emmanuel Forbes, and I would too. A.J. Brown did. Puka did all day long. Like, I would go after number one in the Rams secondary from the very first play. Because they don't have a lot of depth back there either. So I know he's a first-round pick, but he's not – he's – I don't know. Like, I just see teams go after him.
Baldy, and we're talking to Brian Baldinger here on the Morning Roster, Odyssey NFL Insider, courtesy of the River Islands guest line. Baldy, what did you see from the defensive line in this loss this past week? Obviously, no
Nick Bosa. Nothing. I didn't see anything.
There you go.
I didn't see anything. Honestly, I didn't see great effort. I saw Bryce Huff win a couple of one-on-ones. Bryce probably was the most active guy they had. But when you come out of a game and you don't have a sack, you don't have a quarterback hit, you're like, what did you do? How'd they impact the game?
Fred Warner. First time in 10 years. First time in 10 years they haven't done that. No quarterback hits or sacks.
It's unreal. Like, but, you know, it's one thing to look at the stat sheet and go, is this a mistake? And then you go watch the tape and you go, no, it's not a mistake. Like, they're not anywhere near the quarterback. But, you know, on the play that Fred Warner strips in the middle of the field, the ball's on the ground. They got four defensive linemen that have not even begun to pursue to the football. In fact, all four Jacksonville offensive linemen beat four defensive linemen to the ball. Like, I said on the breakdown of that play, Robert Saleh could get all pissy about what Liam Cohen's doing, whatever. Like, I'd be pissed at my defensive line. Like, that's what happens when you – I think that's what happens when you lose Nick Bosa. You lose a guy that knows how to play the game the right way with great talent but great effort. And you just can't let that slide. The great players in San Francisco have been Bosa and Fred. We know who they are. And they probably are their hardest working guys, you know, George. And you lose a great player and he's not on the field. I don't know if they have another ringleader there, another alpha dog that can show them how to do it.
Baldy, you referenced it. Let's just talk about it. What did you make of Liam Cohen and Saleh yelling back and forth? And what did you make of the comments from Saleh last week about the legal sign stealing from the Jags?
Well, I don't think it should. Like, everybody does this. Everybody. I steal signs watching these games. I'm looking for Aaron Rodgers, you know, little signal to DK Metcalf that we're going to run a smoke route here. I'm stealing signs. I can see banjo calls. I mean, I see all this stuff. Like, everybody, it's a sign language business. Everybody's doing this. I mean, I can tell stories of Buddy Ryan back in Philly with Rex and Rob Ryan doing things. I mean, everybody has done this. It's no big deal. It really isn't. I mean, that's what you should be doing. You should be trying to get every advantage you possibly can. So to make it a public story just seems silly to me.
Baldy, I actually thought that Liam Cohen was excellent in this game, and they made a lot of mistakes just getting lined up and hiking the ball, like just straight up like setting yourself up. They had a third and one. They took a delay of game. It was third and six. They had to burn a timeout. He ended up having a really nice conversion. But on that drive, what I love from Liam Cohen is that on second down, they ran the ball. They were backed up against the end zone after we didn't know if Shanahan took the penalty, declined the penalty, whatever. Instead of it being third and 12, it's second and 17. They run the ball. Then they don't let the Niners sub a third down package, which you know they want to do, and they run no huddle and then fire that ball to Travis Hunter, which I still don't know whether he caught it or not. I thought their ability to run some no huddle in certain situations was a brilliant wrinkle that Liam Cohen brought to the table that kind of befuddled the Niners' defensive packages.
I tell you, anybody that's been around Liam Cohen, man, he's a sharp guy. He's very sharp. If you think about it, he's in Tampa last year. And Tampa couldn't run the ball for 2 years in a row. They were the worst rushing football team in the league. Going back to when Tom Brady, his last year there, they couldn't run the football. They get Bucky Irving. Okay, he's a hell of a back. But they were the fourth leading rushing team in the league last year. Travis Etienne was roadkill the last 2 years. Now he's like, I don't know if he's second in the league in rushing, whatever he is. He's at the top of the leaderboard. Jonathan Taylor, Travis Etienne. Like, he's resurrected. And they're doing it with Walker Little and Robert Hainsey, and they picked up, you know, Mekhi. They're not like first-round picks out there. Like, but they have put together a way, and this Bashaul Tootin is going to be a really good player out of Virginia Tech. He's a South Jersey kid. But, I mean, they're running the football, and that's what he does. He does it in a variety of ways, but he's going to run it on third downs. He's going to run it when you don't expect him to. And the way that they run it is really, it's really crafty. And you really got to study it hard to understand what he's doing.
Baldy, I'm so conflicted as a Niner fan. On one level, it's like, hey, I'm thrilled we're 3-1, right? And then I take a step back and I just look at the injury report and who's going to actually play over the next couple of weeks. Bosa's out for the year. If he plays a couple of games, I'll be surprised. Kittle, still out. I don't even know if he's running right now. I don't know. Purdy, boy, it sure feels like at some point he's going to probably sit out a couple of more games. Jennings, Pearsall. I mean, the list goes on and on. You're referencing Trent looks a little older, and Father Time's starting to show its age. CMC doesn't maybe have the same boost that he used to. How should Niner fans attack this next month of the season? Is this the year on the line? Or do we just got to kind of like go 3-3, 4-3, and just see where we're at? Like, I'm feeling really filled with anxiety right now.
Well, I think the days of the 49ers blowing anybody out the way they once did are over. You know, Mac Jones has to take a team down against Arizona and have a perfect drive to go win the game. Like, that's where they're at right now. They've got to do everything right to eke out these victories right now and celebrate whoever it's against, whether it's division opponent, whatever. Like, they had a chance to win that game on Sunday, but they lost it, with the turnovers. They have to do everything right now. It's the days of just play action pass, take our shots, let's attack I mean, you remember the days when they'd be deep in their own zone with 40 seconds to go in the half, and they would attack, you know, and they'd end up getting points. Like, I don't know. It's a different style right now because of the limit of talent that they have out there and who they're playing. DeMarcus Robinson is out there right now. Like, what they're going with is it's not the same 49er, you know, star-studded team.
Yeah, and the part that's so perplexing, they got the right kicker, but they get a field goal before halftime. They give up a huge return, and give them free points with 33 seconds on the clock. You give up a punt return touchdown after the big drop, literally the next play after the big drop by Kendrick Bourne. You get a personal foul, a late hit on Chase Lucas on special teams. Like, how is the special teams coverage unit so bad? I don't understand it. Like, it's beyond me.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, we're seeing more block kicks than we've ever seen, punts and kick and field goals, like at a record rate right now. I mean, I'm not tracking it, but it feels like it is. Like, it feels like it's every week is deciding these games. But, you know, this new kickoff rule is, you know, honestly, it's winning and losing games for teams. You know, like Arizona the other night, like they kick off and it lands on the 21-yard line. You know, next thing you know, the ball's at the 40. Seattle's at the 40-yard line. One play to Jackson Smith and Jigba, and they're kicking the game-winning field goal. Like, I see the Rams. You watch this week. This kicker for the Rams, this guy Cardi, he kicks a knuckleball. All right? Nobody can field it. And the ball's bouncing, and guys are misjudging it, and they're dropping it, and they're covering the kick at the 20 or inside the 20. It happened all day to the Eagles. Somehow the Eagles still won the game. But, like, they better practice catching a knuckleball because he kicks it like that, and it's on purpose. But, I mean, the kicking game is winning and losing games for people right now. And it used to be like you want to win two games because of your special teams, but you definitely don't want to lose two games because of your special teams. And you could say the 49ers have already lost a game because of their special teams.
And I can't remember one game where they won it because of their special teams in the Kyle Shanahan era. No, seriously.
The playoff game against the Green Bay Packers is the only one.
Oh, that's the only one. Hofanga.
That's it.
That's a great call right there.
They fired that day, LaFleur, I think he fired his special teams coach before they got back into the locker room.
He did.
I think he was fired that fast.
Baldy. Should the Niners start Mac Jones this week? Short week. Brock, if there was practice yesterday, Brock would not have been a participant. Clearly looks and sounds like the toe is bothering him. That's what he told Shanahan after the game on Sunday. That Sunday night, he told him the toe is bothering him. Should they just start Mac Jones?
Well, I'd like to know what that conversation, how that went. I mean, because if Brock can go, he's going to go. But if he's limited because it's a short week and he's got a lot of soreness from playing on it, then I would go with Mac. Like, I want the healthiest guy out. Mac proved that he can win games and he can run this offense. So it's not to knock Brock, but give me the healthiest guy out there. This defensive line of the Rams can get after you. Like, they've got six guys that can win one-on-ones. Kobe Turner, you know all the names. So your quarterback movement is going to be important against this front and how they come after you.
One last one for you, Bald, before we get out. Trent had the highest PFF grade on the team. All right? Now, I know PFF, take it or leave it, whatever. What did you specifically, I know you referenced it a little, what did you specifically see from Trent?
Well, I just thought, like, you know, there was one throw where Brock got, you know, bumped and affected the throw, and, you know, Josh Hines-Allen is coming after him. And I thought he was, you know, like, Josh's a good player. You know, and he plays hard. Trayvon Walker's a good player. But I thought he was giving up too much ground to Josh Hines-Allen, to be honest with you, on a couple of pass rushes. And the type of – I mean, I don't care who the player is. Like, Trent normally doesn't give up that much ground. So PFF can grade him any other one. He didn't give up a sack or anything. But I just thought he gave up more ground than I'm used to seeing Trent give up against a good pass rusher.
Hey, Baldy, where are you at this weekend?
I am in Detroit and Cincinnati this weekend. Ooh. But when they gave me that game, it was Cincinnati was 2-0 and before Burrow got hurt.
Real quick.
They might have some regrets, but I'll get a chance to look at Detroit here. They look like, you know, I mean, they're just, you know, you just have to admire Dan Campbell and how he coaches that football team right now.
I love him. Should the Niners be going after Trey Hendrickson like right now, given that defensive line performance without Nick Bosa?
Well, I don't know if he's available, and I don't know if he can. I mean, just I don't know if they can afford the contract. But if it, I would make the phone call if I was John Lynch, I would be calling Cincinnati to see what I could do. I mean, I would be making. I wouldn't be sitting pat with what I have on that team right now. I would be combing this whole league, looking like I would. If you want to, if you're serious about winning this division with the injuries that they've had, I'd be. Today's Tuesday. I'd have five players in there working them out right now.
Hey, Baldy,
they need reinforcements.
Great stuff. They absolutely do. Zero quarterback hits, zero sacks for the first time in 10 years for that Niners defensive line without Nick Bosa. It's just insane. Baldy, we'll do it next week, man.
Yep. See you guys. Yep. Enjoy Thursday night, guys.
He's the best.
Let's go. Brian Baldinger leads us to injury report.
Okay, bring me back. Bring me back, guys.
It's time for the injury report.
Bring him back on Friday.
Brought to you by Bonser and Gerson, Northern California's premier workers' compensation law firm, helping injured workers get their lives back for over 40 years.
Was Baldy injured too via the injury report?
What was he saying?
I think he's saying bring him back.
No, what I was saying is, with the 49er victory on Thursday night, bring me back on Friday morning. Let's talk about it.
I'm ready.
You don't have to tell me twice, Baldy.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
My wife will be in New York, and I'll be with the little guy by myself all night, so I'll be very sleepless in San Francisco.
I know you'll be charting every single play, Joe.
I'm sure a psycho.
There he goes, Brian Baldy.
I learned through you, Baldy. You're the best.
He's the best. Ricky Pearsall, by the way, has a PCL injury. There you go. Head coach Kyle Shanahan said that Pearsall is dealing with a PCL injury in his right knee, but the hope is that it's minor. Pearsall was a non-participant on the 49ers' hypothetical practice report yesterday. No official determination has been made for Ricky's status for Thursday night's game. The injury report was brought to you by Boxer & Gerson, Northern California's premier workers' compensation law firm, helping injured workers get their lives back for over 40 years. What's coming up in the game is brought to you by Fremont Bank. Here for you, here for good. We'll react to what Baldy had to say with our next guest, who joins us every Tuesday at 8 o'clock in studio. It's the one, the only, Bonte Hill on 95.7 The Game.